welcome to Tech Talk Back Take 2 with me, Ewan Rankin, Eric Lanigan, James Hart, Sarah Gray and Mike Hurley. You've got us for the roundup of the week's tech on a Thursday night. Bagel Tech Big has moved. We're going to try and do it on Thursdays for a while and see how it goes. But generally speaking, I think the mood of the people is that it's better on a Thursday, as always. So here we go, the big panel that we've got lined up for you. Top left, Mr. James Hart. Hello, mate.
Good evening, Ewan. Good evening, listener.
Both of you. How's life at the Beeb?
It's quite good. I've been doing interviews and appraisals, so it's lots of interrogations, which is quite fun, as long as they don't cry.
And you get told off by HR.
Absolutely. Oh, don't mess with HR.
Don't mess with HR. Next thing we got from Mike Hurley from The Bro Show. How's it going, mate?
Very well, sir. How are
Girlfriend's
you?
Just turned up in the chat room. Don't slag her off again. That probably cost you a fortune last week, didn't it, mate?
Never. She's
and
too
and
good.
Quite right as well, Sammy. I'm on your side, girl. good week?
Yes, very good, thank you. Very good.
I'm trying to shout a bit as well because everyone says I'm quiet. And beneath White, we've got Sarah. How's it going?
Hello!
There? Hello.
Hello!
Working from home today.
Yes.
Working as in working with a capital W or working as in inverted commas?
No, as in with a capital W.
Good girl. That's always admission in public that you worked hard. Well done. And last but by no means least, a beleaguered man, browbeaten, smashed to pieces by a visceral chat room, Eric Lanigan. Are you all right, mate? Do you want a cup of tea?
Yeah, or maybe a stiff drink. I've never encountered such a hateful group of Windows fanboys who just continued to attack and berate me, claiming I had the facts wrong about something that I absolutely know that I had the facts right about, things that I couldn't possibly have them wrong about, quoting directly from Microsoft's press release, showing them the live Microsoft demo of the Microsoft Windows 8 platform. And they would say, this guy's an idiot. They're not saying this. And it's like, they exactly said that. It's like, were you not watching? And then they make personal attacks. And it's like, how do you get off saying this, people, when I just showed you the video with the Microsoft person saying those exact words? It was crazy. I mean, I know that in the Thursday morning time slot I have, which is right before Windows Weekly, that there are a lot of ardent Windows fans, but I was even repeating some of Paul Thurrott's opinions and quoting him from his site, and they were disagreeing with that and saying that I was way off base for agreeing with Paul Thurrott, which is their hero who comes on after me. So, crazy morning.
You brushed it off well, though, I think.
Well, thanks. It was rough.
It obviously
you handled it well, though, Eric.
It obviously
just careful opening your front doors, all I'll say.
That's it. It obviously didn't bite too deep.
I may have to change all my passwords.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, have you got a Gmail account?
Yeah, ooh, I better invoke that new authentication system.
Well, we'll talk about that a bit later. 35 million Google accounts that were in, or profiles that were open and accessible to everyone. We've got the Windows 8 video popped out today, which did look rather interesting. I think it's definitely worth a good talk. We had a young lad in China sold his kidney so he could have an iPad 2, which seems a bit extreme, I think. It was through a broker, a legitimate broker who sells organs. Thank God I live in England. And last but by no means least, Google had a bit of a kicking with it. And we're going to have a chat about their new authentication system because we've road tested it, or at least James has. So shall we start with Windows 8?
Sure.
I've just done that whole thing and forgot to switch the camera over. Duh. Yeah. Windows 8. So, Eric, are you impressed or not impressed with what you saw today?
You're supposed to say, so this is for phones, right? I go, no! You got the facts wrong!
No, it's tablets. Come on, dude.
It's for everything. It's for tablets. It's not for phone, or if it is, they haven't said that. They've said the opposite, that phone is a separate platform with a totally separate underlying code and different applications and everything. But Windows 8, totally brand new interface, the greatest departure from a desktop OS we've seen since probably the move from DOS to Windows. Mm-hmm. It completely does away with the Windows metaphor. There are no windows with a close or an open button. Nothing overlaps. Everything is full screen. I love making the incredibly stupid joke saying, why do they call it Windows 8? They should call it Tiles 1. Because that's what it is. What do you guys think?
Oh, yeah. Anyone else?
Oh, what a comedian.
That's really bizarre. I mean, that's that, that I get a little bit frustrated that I can't drag things around on my phone and tablet PCs because they just all fill the full screen. And so they're going away from that. And my goodness, monitors are getting so big these days. I suppose, it's, as you say, it's tiled rather than sort of windowed, I guess.
Well, what I thought was interesting was that they seem to be very much looking at this whole approach is going to be, you know, real promotion of the touch application, the touch basis of it. You know, they're on big screens with touch capability, and they want you to take your existing monitor at 30 inches and dump it for something that's got touch capability. Otherwise, you're not going to be on the curve. Is that going to happen, or...?
It's funny you should say about the 30-inch monitors, because I was just thinking about this from a point of view of, you know, I know that the idea that desktop PCs must be, you know, gone, but, you know, I don't think it is. And, you know, you can just thinking of you having, you know, this screen in front of you, but maybe 30 inches or whatever, and, you know, you're just running your finger along it. And I'm thinking, well, I'm not so sure it fits for every single platform. PCs are traditionally sort of where you sit on your desk and there's some distance away from you, your face. So you're going to be, you know, you're not necessarily going to have the screen in your face. So I'm just not really sure about this. For tablets and phones, absolutely. But for desktop PCs or even laptops, not totally sure.
I mean, does this signal a change towards... an interaction with desktops that's unwelcome from the majority of desktop users? I mean, speaking from what I've seen of Lion, you know, they don't seem to be going quite as far as Windows have been looking at the video, but they're going to a similar kind of process. You've got the OS interchange between all of them, and the OS is starting to act more like an application in its use than it is an operating system.
Yes, I think, you know, with Lion, and we'll see more of this on Monday, I'm sure, Apple took some ideas from, ideas that were successful from the multi-touch iOS operating system, brought those back to the Mac and said, okay, so on the desktop, people, and they said specifically, people don't want to touch the screen. I would actually debate them on that. I think I actually would not mind at all having a touchscreen MacBook Air. They said they don't, though. That's not their philosophy currently. They were going to build that into the trackpad, just greater multi-touch functionality of controlling Mac OS X from the trackpad with multi-touch swipe gestures. Microsoft has seen that idea and said, okay, we're gonna go even farther and say that the desktop is gonna be totally touch-based first. So they have this new interface that they're calling Touch First, and that is the interface of Windows 8. And this is what a lot of people were having trouble realizing. Yes, Microsoft hasn't gone into much detail about this, but they did say, whether they only said this just to get people riled up and get people talking, could be possible. But what they said was that this is the Windows 8 interface. This is not a skin. This is not a layer. This is not something that appears for tablet users and disappears for desktop users. This is not something that is designed for touch and not for mouse. This is not, meaning this is not an interface that would be different for keyboard and mouse folks. A mouse and keyboard work and click and function on top of this gigantic touch-based interface. So Microsoft is completely marrying and bringing to the desktop touch interfaces along with traditional keyboard and mouse style human interface input. And I have a lot of reservations about whether that's the right move and whether any interface can really cater as well to the finger as it can to the mouse pointer.
So, Eric.
Yeah, that was partly my point, Eric. I just don't think the interface is as slick.
Mike, go ahead.
Like I say, is this the full how it's going to look? Because I thought that I'd heard or read that you could quit the sort of the Metro UI and go to the regular desktop. You know, it will always start in that start screen, but you could get rid of that and go to the regular standard desktop. Is that the case?
Yes and no. There's the perception from some people that it is like a launcher. It is like a very graphical start screen, home screen. I know that's not what you're saying, but some people think that, and that isn't true.
But not like Front Row, then.
Right. It's not like Front Row. It's not like not at all like Apple's new, what do they call that, Launchpad, I think, where you get the row of icons like in iOS. They've said that this is actually Windows 8, And if you don't develop, they haven't said it this strongly, but I think this is what they were getting at. If you don't develop your apps in this style, which this is the only way they've defined Windows 8 apps, are that it looks and functions like this and ties into this. And everything else seems to be in basically what is a legacy layer, a compatibility layer, a backwards compatibility area. Strangely, you can't get rid of the desktop. You can't get rid of that Windows 7 desktop. And for listeners, just to understand and be on the same page, what you're describing is that when you swipe past these horizontal full screen windows in the new Windows 8 interface, you eventually get to what looks like the Windows 7 desktop with the Windows 7 that you've come to know and love and or hate. And then once you're in there, Windows 7 apps, as long as you're on an x86 chip, run and function as they always have and do on Windows 7, including Microsoft Office. They showed that running in there too. But they've said over and over again, Windows 8 apps are written in JavaScript and HTML5 and JavaScript, and they look like this and they function in this tile-based screen. If they're planning something else, they haven't said it. So, like I said, they might just be trying to gauge people's reactions and see if they're outraged and see if developers are angry and up in arms or something. Or they might be serious about this. But it seems like that is the future. And more than being a coexisting platform of the old and the new style, it seems like they're saying the new style is the future and we're just providing the old Windows desktop for backwards compatibility.
James, I'm sorry to grab you when you've just taken a mouthful of banana. However,
I'm there.
You were shaking your head at the start of that.
I just think I was looking at the video and I thought the bloke poking around on that screen has such slender fingers. Old sausage hands isn't going to really enjoy this very much. It's just, I just can't see how people, and then as Eric went on, I could feel my blood boiling. I don't know, I'm just joking. As Eric went on, I could just sense that it's a complete about turn by Microsoft. And it raised so many questions, like, for example, they're going to build it in JavaScript to make JavaScript and HTML5. Is it going to be JavaScript and HTML5, or is it going to be Microsoft's JavaScript and HTML5 with a couple of little bits and pieces in that they and if it's not, my goodness, somebody's just, I don't know, it's like they've sacked the whole of a section of management, got somebody in who's gone, I've got a brilliant new idea. My goodness, that's really hard to take in.
See, the first thing I saw when I saw the start of it and heard some of the things that were being said and you guys have said, is that this is like Microsoft going from an OS that's like the gunfighter, the OK Corral, and trying to, you know, forget walled garden. They're trying to run it now like it's the Vatican. I mean, this departure, this really is an utter and total about face, and this is beyond perhaps the level of control you'd expect from Apple, no?
It's the biggest and boldest statement of any manufacturer of any software platform out there today. It is the most radical departure for either a phone or for a desktop OS. And that's what I think people had a lot of trouble understanding today, or just didn't bother to watch the video or something. It is such a different interface. I don't see how they could actually call it Windows, because literally there are no Windows. I mean, yeah, Windows is kind of hidden back there, but the new interface that they want you to see and use all the time, the concept of a window as we know it, as we've known it since the first Mac, since the first Windows, since Xerox PARC, is gone. There are no icons. There's no clicking. There are no resizable and overlapping windows in the new interface. It's all full screen tiles. I wouldn't be surprised if they end up calling it. I mean, we know that they've said Windows 8 is an internal code name. I wouldn't be surprised. And actually, I would hope that they call it something other than Windows. Why stick to that tired old brand name when there are no more Windows?
It's not exactly a secret code, is it? Was that basically Operation Make a New OS? No one will ever guess what it does. Mike, you had a point there.
Yeah, I'm really happy they're doing this. Personally, I think they cannot continue to do the same operating system over and over and over again with small iterations every time. I mean, I make my personal prediction will be this if this becomes the next version of Windows, it will look very different to what we got now or to what they're showing today. I don't think that it, they will. I think they may do a bit of an about turn and it won't be as strict as in, like, this is how we want you to run things.
This is like a concept car,
definitely
be
more of a sort of add-on. But I think that I'm really pleased that Microsoft are doing this, because I just think that it's about time that they made some sort of major change.
There is a real good point there, because, I mean, we've been saying for weeks, you know, why are you all trying to catch up to Apple? Why is no one trying to leapfrog ahead? And then the minute that Windows clearly do leapfrog ahead and take a completely different view on what the OS is and should be doing, we're actually sitting here making fun of it.
And I think, well, you know why that is, Ewan? That's because Microsoft were the last people we thought would do it.
That's a good point. Good point.
Exactly. If nothing else defines Microsoft Windows, it's backwards compatibility. Almost any application ever written for Windows, even on like the 386 chip or so, can run in Windows in some kind of emulation mode that is still possible in there. You know, it even runs the 16-bit apps. It runs everything that was ever written, and that is what their core customers want. I mean, a lot. What is it, like 50-60% of people or so are still running Windows XP and running Internet Explorer 6 because they have corporate large-scale software deployments that require that. And their customers, more so than even home and end user customers, are these big businesses and developers who need to customize and deploy large systems over this. And so for them to tell them to reconsider the entire desktop computing interface is more bold than I would ever have expected from Microsoft.
I mean, there's an interesting point from Robert Falk in the chat room saying corporate won't like Windows 8 if things are different as they seem right now. And the other point that's being made by Aaron is that, you know, are we going to see two versions, one that's personal and tile-based, or and one that's then corporate, which is more traditional front-end? Well, if you've got the two ends there, then yes, you've got the ability to switch between the two. Corporate's not going to back away while that's there. But if you roll back, you know, you're talking about compatibility there. There are systems out there, and I looked at a system today, and it was running on a Pentium 2, running Windows 3.11, and there is nothing else that will run that system. It's like, you know, Dr. Happy Matt the other week saying he went down to a machine place, opened up the control system because they'd had a problem with it, looked inside, and he's got a Mac 2 there running version 6.
You know, tell you what, when the hard drive goes wrong on those things, you'll have a hell of a job finding a replacement one, because the BIOS doesn't accept large hard drives anymore.
Well, I was talking to the guy that does the IT support on these systems that I was looking at and taking pictures of today, and he was saying, I said, how the hell do you manage drivers? And he said, I have to go home and write them. And he goes home and he sits and writes drivers, because there's no other way of doing it, because there's no support from Microsoft. There's nothing he can get any help with. He has to make it up as he goes along. And then you start looking at his position within the organization. You start, Sarah, you'd identify with this, the corporate liabilities of the fact that you've got one guy who owns everything in terms of intellectual property on the system. And he's a good guy. He's not trying to withhold it from the corporation. But that then breeds this, you know, he could charge what he wants effectively for a salary. Yeah. The corporation has to do it, because everything would stop running. Yeah. He doesn't do it. But then if you look at a risk management viewpoint, oh, I'll tell you what, mate, get yourself in the car and go to another depot for us. Go and take the fifth highest risk of fatality that you're going to be in for in the next 12 months. And you own and know everything about our systems and our OSs that drive the items that we run for the customer.
Mm.
Absolutely crazy. But it's real. It's really, really happening. This guy really goes home and writes his own drivers. And we're all sitting talking about Windows 8 and a complete departure from the norm. Windows has got to, you know, Microsoft has got to realize it has OSs that do some serious, serious things, like run power stations and you know, nuclear facilities and those kind of things. And the baby can't go out with the bathwater here, surely.
No, even if they did do a personal corporate version, I think that the corporate version would just be the same OS with the Metro turned off. I still think that at the base, it will still be running a version of Windows, which will be like everybody knows, but they will have this, I don't know what I'd want to call it, skin, but this other thing on top of it, another layer on top of it, which is more of a mobile, more app-based system that we're becoming more used to. But so, you know, if somebody needs to get a lot of actual work done, they can just click back under to
they could call the corporate one Montego.
after the Rover Montego.
Absolutely, the Rover Metro and the Rover Montego. There you go. It's the two different things. I bet they do.
You've got to say that whole approach, Mike, when you were describing it there. I'm not. Don't take this as an offensive thing. It's not. But that sounds more like a dog with two tails than anything else that I've heard so far this evening.
Well, they are, aren't they? They have been for some time.
Okay, there's no getting away from it. They really tails. Are.
Well, this is the thing I'm questioning is, are Microsoft looking at the iPad going, you know, if we don't catch up with this, all workplaces will have iPads and they won't have PCs anymore, or the PC as they know it is going to go away because so much can be done online, on the cloud, blah, blah, blah. We need to come up with something that is not future-proof, but actually people will need in the future. But I'm wondering if actually they've gone a little bit too far and everyone's going to go, no, we don't want that yet. We're okay with our desktop, thanks.
One other thing that's just occurred to me is that when Vista came out, that Microsoft brought out this thing called Aero, came along with it. And I was thinking about it when I first saw the Windows 8 thing with the multiple tiles, and I thought, there's a bit of this is almost like the next step on from Aero.
I never played with Aero. Can you? Because I know Aero was kind of very much a front end interface, but more than that, I don't know. So what?
Oh no, Aero is just what they call the interface in Windows 7.
Right. Yeah, but it was for tiling windows, wasn't it? And when we think about the most people, I don't think use that feature within it. So,
Aero's the kind of like transparency and the nonsense, isn't it? It is just,
yeah, I know.
Nonsense.
It was a show. I mean, I really think if it was a show feature, I've never actually used it, but I remember seeing all the demos and stuff with it and thinking, that's just for show.
Sarah, you may be confusing Aero with with a feature that is in Aero. I forget what they call it, but they're. There is a feature where you snap the two windows. It has various window snapping and framing and resizing features. But Aero itself, what do they call it? Aero Glass. Aero, and then Aero Glass is the subset of that is heavy on the GPU. But Aero itself is just, it's not a matter of using it or not using it. It's just that's what Windows 7 interface is. It's like OS 10 calls it Aqua.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So
it doesn't give you a better user experience, really. Because all it does is just make things a bit shinier. It's just like, I think both of them are catching up from Ubuntu, which have the little wibbly wobbly windows and the things that the cubes and stuff like that. They were doing that with I can't remember the name of it now. What was the name of that, Sarah? Can you remember?
I'm not totally sure what you're talking about.
Linux came up with a 3D interface,
which had a version of Ubuntu.
Sorry, it was 8 or 9. It was quite an early version.
Sorry.
It was quite an early version of Ubuntu that they had the wibbly wobbly windows, and you had all the sort of the animations and the
Sarah, who doesn't know about the wibbly wobbly bits?
You know about the wibbly wobbly windows. I can't remember what it was called. It was named after some precious stone. I can't remember what it was called now.
I can't remember either. Now you mentioned the precious semi precious stone, not amethyst or something.
Beryl. It was something like that. Was it amethyst desktop? Something like that. But they've been doing it for ages, and all again it was look and feel. It didn't do anything clever.
Yeah, but this is the fact that we're having this conversation means it wasn't actually, didn't really take off.
So you know what's interesting about this is, and as you guys were talking, it occurred to me that I don't know of any other company competing in this space that would make such a big, bold announcement and such an incomplete and yet startling announcement a year and a half before they ship the product. I mean, Apple, we know they don't do that. They don't make announcements like that except for, a couple of months at the most.
Out of the blue?
Even Google doesn't make announcements at such a scale, and then they would decide that they want to backtrack or make major modifications. That seems to be a Microsoft exclusive thing. And
maybe they're just sounding out the corporate market.
I wonder
how it doesn't matter.
I'm sorry, Sarah, say it again.
From the personal market, I think it probably would be okay. But as we discussed, I don't think the corporate is ready for that yet. And maybe it's just a sounding out of the corporate market to see, because we know that's where I think Microsoft are still dominant. And maybe they're just sounding out the large corporates, see what the reaction they get. I can't think of anything else why they would say something a year and a half before possible release date.
That is something that I had brought up earlier today, that it's possible that they botched the presentation more than the software. Maybe they should have given a more testing the waters kind of feel, a more hesitant dipping our toes in, what do you guys think kind of feel, rather than this is it, everyone rewrite their apps because this is Windows 8, get used to it, which is kind of how they presented it, even though we know it's like pre-alpha, it's so early, they don't even have names for the interface features yet.
But I think if they actually came out and said, hey guys, what do you think, you know, this is what we're thinking of doing, everyone would, all the journos would come out and say they don't know what they're doing.
This approach is very, very dangerous for their biggest. I mean, Microsoft's biggest customers are the corporate enterprises and the ones who rely on, you know, their systems at a huge broad scale. Once they pick the vendor, they pick Microsoft and they pick the hardware, and then they stick with it for years and support it, and on and on and on. They are at the biggest risk. I mean, that's why everyone says Microsoft has to make a new strategy, is because they've got the Chrome OS trying to cut into Microsoft's biggest area like that. They've got Apple cutting into their home markets and also then infiltrating into businesses with the popularity of the iPads and iPhones and everything. This is a very risky time for Microsoft to say, hey everybody, you're right, you do have to rewrite everything from scratch. Because if you think about it, if companies were evaluating, well, should we jump ship from Microsoft platforms and go over to Androids or Google's other ones or Apple's or Linux, you know, basic desktop Linux now looks more like Windows than anything else does or will. Companies who may have been reevaluating that on a cost point, but saying, well, we'd have to redesign everything from scratch. Now they have to do that anyway. So there may be, and it's going to a brand new platform that has no installed base on an interface that, as CNET pointed out, has no track record of popularity. Windows Phone has 1% of the market. It's not like people are like, yes, I love this Metro UI tiled interface. No track record on that. And the Zune, which they canceled it, was the only other product to have this. So it's extremely risky to tell people, yes, reevaluate your entire software infrastructure, write everything from scratch, and write it in HTML and JavaScript, which if you write it for Windows, you may as well have written it for any other web browser or platform because it's completely cross-compatible. So it's like, are they trying to make themselves less relevant?
How do you write a printer driver in HTML5?
I think that won't stick. I think that what they're saying about the way the apps will be coded, I think that will change. As more developers try and get on board of it, I think that they may say, oh, actually, no, we'll give you a better, you know, some better frameworks to code in and better, you know, to make your apps in some sort of language. Because you're right, Eric, it doesn't really make sense to just make web apps for a desktop operating system. It seems a bit peculiar.
Because that's the presentation layer. You need a database layer. You need you do need other application layers than just a presentation layer. It's as simple as that.
HTML5.
Right, yeah, so HTML5 does do all those things. You're right, yeah.
A few comments in the chat room. Robert's saying he's heard that Volvo has still got a steel press that runs on a Commodore 64. Which I could well believe after what I saw today, definitely. A question from Aaron here. Take it one stage further. We won't be throwing away our monitors. Based on the fact we've now got this tile interface, what about an interaction with the Kinect?
On top of the screen.
So you don't have to worry. You see the screen in front, you've got a Kinect above, and now you're swiping backwards and forwards and starting applications with hand movements.
Okay,
that makes sense. I mean, because if the Xbox UI changed quite significantly when Kinect was released, and I think it also harkens a little bit to what Metro is. I think that for Microsoft, Metro is the way forward across all devices.
What do you guys think of the actual aesthetics of Metro? Do you say, brightly covered. I love this. I want to buy this, put it on everything, and have it this way for the next 10 years?
I really enjoy it. When I looked at the video, I mean, I'm not a Windows user. I haven't used a Windows OS since Vista. And I looked at what I saw on it, and it looked slick. It looked like it was connected to the guy's hand. It didn't look like it was lagging, which is what you want in any kind of touch OS. And it kind of looked pretty cool as well, as it wasn't just the fact that it functioned, which, you know, you get a lot of stuff with Microsoft and the functionality is superb, but they box it and they call it Kinect, you know, something which is completely crap. You know, their front end marketing is real utter rubbish. But this thing looked slick. It looked smooth. It looked very, very useful.
If it's still smooth when a load of crap's installed on it in 6 months' time, maybe. But
yeah, great point. And I mean, the thing is as well. Question, you know, to those in the know, what's the load on the GPU going to be like? Higher.
Well, GPUs are now being packed with as much memory as the PC itself, you know.
Yeah.
You get 1 gig, 2 gig GPUs, which are just, just can do so much floating point stuff.
And so much better. Crazy.
I think what Microsoft have shown today is what Apple is trying to now do. Like Apple, you know, we can see it from things in Lion and the way that they're talking. They're trying to bring the iOS and OS X to join together. And what I think Microsoft are doing with Windows 8 is showing, look, this is how we plan to go forward. This will be our OS, which will be on tablets. It will be on the desktop. It will be on all of our devices. And this is how you interact with it. It will look the same across all of them.
Let's not forget the timing of the release of this video.
Exactly. Yeah, they know that they need to show today that they will still be relevant in a year's time, because on Monday, Apple's going to lift the lid.
I think it's showing that they're going to be relevant by 11 a.m. on Monday morning.
Hey, they got a little bit of press. I mean, they've done it right. Do it now. Get in a little bit before everyone completely forgets about everything else on Monday.
Steve has learnt from Uncle Jobs. They've managed to pip him at the post and show something which is beyond probably what Steve Jobs is going to show. There'd be an interesting thing, you know, what kind of conversations you think are happening at the Apple campus based on the fact that they've got all the presentations ready. You know, they're going to steamroller ahead with what they've got. There's no way they're going to pull anything or change anything. But they have kind of just, you know, for too many years, Apple have always pipped Microsoft to innovation and to something, and good on them. You know, I'm not a Windows user, but good on them. They've
agreed,
stumped up, and they've tried to put something that's innovative, and they've tried to show that they're thinking outside the box and that they're not playing catch up anymore. They've actually leapfrogged, and actually you would suggest potentially that on Monday when Steve Jobs takes the stage, he's going to be sitting there in the back of his mind thinking, we're not even playing catch up at this point to Windows. They've actually taken the initiative ahead there.
The great thing about Apple, though, is, of course, if they build their own boxes to think out of.
Yeah,
beautiful boxes made of aluminium.
Beautiful boxes that cost far, far too much. There we go. Google had 35 million profiles released through an article. Someone built a database this week as well, which wasn't particularly good. And there's a new opportunity for security, James, which you've taken on board, I gather.
I think this is something which I think is going to emerge over the time. I've got something on my Android phone called Google Authentication, which comes up. I'll just show you it now, actually, if I can unlock my blooming screen. So that when you press the Google Authentication button, it comes up with a number. And you type that number with your password. It's like one of those RSE keys. You type that number with your password into any Google web browser login that is never seen before. If you logged into the machine before, it knows it's safe. It's obviously stored a cookie somewhere. I think you get 30 days where you have to do it again. So that if you're in an internet cafe or something, or somebody steals your credentials, if they try to log in as you, they won't be able to log in because they haven't got this number. And so it's just
James,
an extra layer of security.
Just want to know, you've ruined your authentication by showing the number on the live stream. I mean, I don't know how you feel about that. But
did anyone actually see it?
I saw it.
Oh, dear. But
do you know what my password and my username... I suppose if you know what my username is, yeah, it's true. I don't care.
Well, I think the number is randomly generated each time, isn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely changes.
Just say yes, even if it's not.
Well, no, it's changed again. Every time I push a button, it changes. Look, it's this one now. Oh, no, I bet not.
Dear Google,
please, can you change my numbers? Somebody saw one.
So, James, how come yours is activated with this new method of authentication then?
You just go to Google. If you go to your Google account settings and you've got an Android phone, you download the application. They tell you how to turn it on, and it works. It's really cool. Yeah. It works with... Well, I'll tell you what's even weirder is the Google authentication. If you can't use the code number, they give you a unique password for that application so that when you log into it, be it YouTube or whatever, you have to use that separate password. And as long as you know, if you save that password, it's cool. If you don't want to use it anymore, you click revoke, it turns that password off. It's like a password manager for Google applications. It's pretty amazing.
Whoa, yeah. James, say that again, because I wasn't aware of that. What? And maybe you're talking about something slightly different than I thought you were, because what I was going to say was, you said as long as you have an Android phone, I was going to say, well, you don't need an Android phone because it can also send you this via basic SMS or even call you and place a voice call to you with the code. But you may be talking about something different.
Yeah, I'm just trying to find it in my settings, because it's part of my account settings where you can associate disposable passwords, basically. Really is clever.
Yeah, one of my customers has got a system that they've got for universal access, and you register your email on their corporate telephone directory. And if you're at a cyberspace, then you can go to a browser, log into the standard web page, and when it gives you the options, you can either, if you're on the corporate computers that they've got, you can use your ID card through a PCMI CIA card slot, or you can use a mobile access. And the same principle applies. You just say, please send me a mobile code. And then a couple of seconds later, you get a text with a code in it. You input that, and that's it. You're in to get your corporate email. And it works really, really well. It looks really, really well. The only downside is the fact that it'll only work on IE8. It won't work on Firefox, it won't work on Safari, and it won't work on Chrome.
You're absolutely right, by the way, Eric. Yes, you can get it sent by SMS if you haven't got... you've got a mobile application, but you've also got a phone number you can get it sent to. And also, you've got this little sheet you can print out and stick it in your wallet, just in case you haven't got either of those with you.
So I can stick that under my desk?
Yeah, that's perfect. Exactly what it is, yeah. And you just type... But of course, that only works with the Google suite of applications, so Google Mail, Google Calendar, Google Docs, and the like.
So, James, where can we... I thought you were joking, actually, about the printout. What does the printout tell you? Or what is it? What do you print out?
It's a list of the codes that I showed you on my phone, which I'm not going to do again. It's got a list of those that you can use in case of emergency.
Fascinating. Can you give us a URL for this? Because I think I don't know the whole story about this.
If I put this one into the chat room, let me just go. It's... hang on, I just made my window go bigger. Random clicking. I need a touch screen and non-sausage fingers. There we go.
Damn, this is good audio.
I know, it's good.
Yeah, Google.com. Guys, can't guess what I'm installing at the moment on my Android phone.
Hang on, Sarah. Say again, James.
It's google.com/accounts/SMS auth config, which is where I got it from. But if you've logged into Google, that's how you get into it.
Interesting. Yeah, I was there yesterday looking around, but I guess I didn't get as far as the printouts of the temporary passwords. I'll have to look at that again. Cool.
Very, very good.
Underneath it is the application specific passwords. Very neat. And if there was an open standard for that a lot of places could to have uptake to, just like the Open ID thing, if that could be added to it for this extra layer of password protection, we wouldn't need capture anymore.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely, I mean, once this becomes something which is very functional and very usable, I think you'll see this popping up an awful lot more in the future. It's been very much the corporate bastion mm-hmm. for the last sort of 3 or 4 years that it's been going. But now if Google have taken hold of it, then good on them.
If anyone's interested, by the way, it's the Google Authenticator. That's what the name of the Android app is.
Right, there we go. Did anyone watch Eric Schmidt talking at D9?
I saw the highlights.
Yeah, I mean, he made some interesting comments about almost aware vehicles and that kind of stuff, and where Google is going to be focusing on making things do the job that they're supposed to do far more easily and far, far better. And one of his throwaway comments when they talked about viruses, etc., and malware was to say, well, why don't you get a Mac? Which
I caught that. Home. Yeah,
yeah, not great. Walt Mossberg cracked a joke as well.
And by the way, guess what Apple did? They put out a software update, and now they do check. They silently and without asking you first update a database of malware definitions. So it was right about that one right here.
Yeah, the
sorry, I
the
need to do that.
Thing was that
I need to do that. I'm a little bit bruised from earlier, so that's right. Not gloating. That's a personal reassurance.
The interesting thing with that is that they're doing it on a daily basis, and the definitions that they uploaded for Mac Defender on day one were defeated within an hour. So,
yes, that's true.
Yeah, Aaron in the chat room is reminding me to push Sophos, which is superb. And of course, you can get it for free. Use the click through on our website. Go to the bottom of the page there. You'll see Sophos on the right hand side. Click there, and you can get an antivirus for your Mac. But equally, that's only going to be updated periodic. I mean, it updates every 2 minutes, but I don't think you're going to get a Mac update every 2 minutes for a while.
So I was going to say, the Mac update, the malware update, happens completely silently.
Yeah, it does. It runs in the background, and it goes back to the server and checks every 2 to 5 minutes.
That's a hell of a... I mean, if you consider that for every single Mac, that's a lot of traffic Apple's dealing with there.
No, this is the Sophos unit, not the...
I'm talking about the Apple malware thing.
The Apple malware thing is they only do it on a daily basis.
That's still quite a lot.
So they're an entire... It is. But, I mean, if you look at the current state of the AV market, you're talking about almost always on monitoring and always on upgrading. So it's my Sophos updates on a regular basis. You'll see the little things going up and down the logo, and then all of a sudden it'll stop. And your CPU cycles just don't take a hit at all. Eric, have you installed it yet?
Nope.
Doesn't need to now, does he?
He's not going to install that. Sarah's going to buy an iPad for herself before Eric installs Mac AV for...
I'm not going to do... I saw the video. Ed Bott, who kind of broke the story originally, went back and he's now shown videos comparing how Apple's malware detection finds it, and how the new rewrites and re-releases of this malware now evades Apple's detection of it. You still do have to install something. You do have to click it. You don't have to give a password anymore, but you do have to click install. So it requires a person who is ignorant of the danger of it. So I'm not worried yet for myself.
Okay, mate. Not a problem then. One of the things to mention as well, we were talking there about the Apple thing on Monday. It's at 10 o'clock on, it's Monday morning at the Buena Vista Center. No, Yerba Buena Center in
it's Moscone, isn't it?
Moscone, yeah. Which is, that's part of the Moscone complex. If you want to watch it and you're in the UK, then get yourself down to London, because Steve Naylor, one of our wonderful pals of the London Mac User Group, has got an event running at a pub where they are streaming the event, Apple willing and router willing, live while they're in the pub. Now, he sent me a message saying, could you just let everyone know that they can come to this? So there you go, Steve, I've done that. But you still haven't told me the name of the pub, dude.
It'll be the trendiest pub in that part of London.
It could be rather busy, if word gets out. But we'll have to. Wow. No, still nothing. Still nothing.
Is he not streamed anywhere else then?
He's not in the chat room anymore. Bugger. There we go.
Does anybody know what this announcement is going to be, by the way? Is it going to be iOS 5?
Yes, definitely.
It's definitely going to be iOS 5.
Steve Jobs confirmed as the presenter of the keynote. He's going to start it all off, despite the fact he's still on medical absence. iOS 5.0 is going to be outlined, and Lion OS 10 is going to be 10.
And something that is called iCloud, who we only know by name, which is highly unusual for Apple to leak the name before the announcement.
Yeah, but there's no details on that, is it? But it's going to be their cloud streaming service, everyone is suggesting. So Steve's back in the chat room with the pub is ... Why not just type the name of the pub, dude? This is a live show and it's not great audio.
The pub's called the ...
There we go. The www... And he's still making me wait. You bugger.
I don't think he knows.
He doesn't know the name of the pub.
It's yet to be defined.
It's your friggin' event, mate. Pick a name of a pub. The Queen's Head. There we go. It's at the Queen's Head. No? There must be a few Queen's Head in London.
The Mac and Mouse. You see, that's...
It's at the Mac and Mouse, of course. There we go. with Will and the boys. Jolly, jolly good. Now then, we've also got a very generous competition for the next 4 months, because if you watch the live stream, you'll see that we've got lower thirds and all that kind of stuff, and they've been very kindly provided to us by Wirecast. Telestream, the people that make Wirecast, have given us 4 copies of Wirecast to give away over the next 4 months, free of charge. Sorry, Eric. And all you've got to do is send us an email, and you could win one each month. Every time you send me one, send it to bageltechbig@gmail.com. Title it as Wirecast Competition. And then all you've got to do in the body of the email is say why you want a copy of Wirecast. I want a copy of Wirecast because, and you can write anything you like. You can make it humorous. You can make it serious. It's entirely your choice. But send me an email to bageltechbig@gmail.com saying, I want a copy of Wirecast because, and we'll pick a winner. And the winner will get...
Who's going to be the judge?
Me and Wirecast.
Right.
And the judge's decision is final. You don't like it. I don't care. But the winner is going to get a $500 copy of Wirecast free of charge.
Ooh.
There you go. So that's a significant investment from them. They've given us all the software to run the video wall. All I need now is a sponsor to give us a computer that will run the video wall properly and give us a decent quality of output, and we're laughing. So there you go. Wirecast, thank you ever so much for their support and sponsorship. They've been absolutely fantastic. Thank you, Janet. You've done us proud. So if you want a copy of Wirecast, send me an email. I want a copy of Wirecast because... And make up a reason. And I might give you one. If you beg hard enough, who knows? I would a copy of Wirecast because you're a very handsome man. A very, very handsome man. What film's that from? It's from a film, isn't it?
Is this a test?
No. Just thought.
Okay.
There you go. Sorry, chat room.
We've got the name of the pub.
It's the Wood Marylebone.
It's the Wood Marylebone.
And it's not a very big pub. I was there a couple of weeks ago.
Is it definitely that? Because he's put down... The word that he's put down of what he's upped is actually censored. So I'm guessing it begins with an F and ends in a D.
Oh, it's up... yeah. What? It's up because it's not far from where I get my coach, my special bus home. So I've been to the Wood. And it's not a bad pub, but... My goodness, if a lot of people turn up, it's going to get cozy.
Oh, hell, this is slick. Wood Marylebone, there we go. It's near to Baker Street, and it's downstairs, apparently. www.woodnw1.com. There we go. That's the website. And it looks like a nice spit and sawdust with some real ale on. Doom Bar, that's a nice beer. I like that.
Oh, yeah, they've got some really nice beers in there, actually. Yeah, they're guest ales and everything.
Excellent choice, Steve. So if you want to watch the keynote live, you can do it there in the downstairs near Baker Street, the Wood Marylebone. There we go. I won't be there, but downstairs has got a big room with an overhead projector, and it's where they meet each month and get drunk. Jolly good.
Hey, Ewan, before you go to cool things, could I jump in with something?
Yeah, sure.
Is that what you were going to do?
Go ahead.
Okay. It's a thought that I wanted to say during the... Sorry, what?
You're suggesting that we work into a plan here, but go ahead.
Just one last thought I had on Windows 8 that I had thought of after Tech Talkback, but I wanted to work this in because I think it's pretty significant. When they were demonstrating it to Walt Mossberg and Kara Swisher, and the two of them asked the Microsoft folks, why are you showing us Microsoft Office running in the Windows 7 environment, in the legacy environment that looks just like Windows 7? And they said, are you going to build Office into this new user interface? And they said, oh, we don't know. We're the Windows people. I thought that was kind of a rude way to answer that, because
the question is
an enormous one. Mm. Because the way that Microsoft rewrites Microsoft Office, or doesn't rewrite Microsoft Office to take advantage of the Windows 8 UI, will dictate what every other developer and enterprise and everyone else does, because that will demonstrate Microsoft's commitment to the new user interface and either ease people's fears. If they say, here's Microsoft Office 2012 or 2013, and how about that? It looks exactly like Windows 7. Then everyone will breathe a sigh of relief and say, oh, well, I guess I don't have to rewrite my software to look like this new user interface. But if they come out with a version, and then they might get very few people writing software that looks like the new one. But if they come out with a brand new Office that looks just like the new Metro UI, totally different, based on finger touches and just so completely different, then everyone will go, whoa, I guess they're really going all in on this one. I guess I do have to rewrite my app or learn the new programming language. Forget everything I knew about their older programming languages that they told everybody to learn in the past. The way that they handle Microsoft Office for Windows 8 will determine how the rest of the world perceives and writes to it. That's the point I wanted to make.
The other thing about that response is, from a political point of view, that just shows a lack of cooperation between different parts of Microsoft.
That's never been the case.
You're joking.
What? No, I know, but I mean, we all laugh and you joke about it and stuff, but to actually voice that from a PR point of view, that kind of response is an absolute...
That's pretty crap, isn't it?
Nightmare.
You might behave like that behind closed doors, but you don't say things like that in public. That's outrageous.
It was only just short of a duh.
And at a public announcement of something which is supposed to be the dog's dinners, you don't say, well, no, we don't know. What are you asking me for?
I've got a clue.
I think to be clear, I didn't quite use the inflection that I used, but I think it was an accurate paraphrase because I remember thinking, whoa, that was a flippant way to answer that.
Hang on a second. We've got, Eric, I'll edit your bit in. Sarah, say again.
I said it's such a public announcement and such a key piece of software, from the same company, they really should have thought that one through beforehand.
Well, it was a question, to be fair, as well, which, you're relying on the dumbass on the end of the question at that point, so... it may be an issue,
but they should have had somebody there to step in at least to say, what the company line is on that one. They really should have thought that one through.
Yes, they should.
Terrible.
Yeah, absolutely. The question then at that point though is that you're talking about this system and UI being a year and a half away at worst. It might come a little sooner. It may come just a fraction later, but it's going to be about 18 months down the line. Now, if you look at current standards of dictation software. I mean, I looked at a dictation software system 20 years ago that was running on DOS 4, and it ran pretty good once you'd trained it. And the current commercial stuff that's available for voice dictation is not as good. It's not good enough to throw away a keyboard. So if you're going to a touch UI, you have got to start thinking about the fact there's got to be a vocal backup to input. And I don't think systems are there, surely.
You don't necessarily, though. Remember, they showed that they envision a world where people dock their tablets into a dock and it becomes a laptop because it provides it with a keyboard and mouse. I think that's goofy because I think for a lot of battery and performance reasons, you don't want your tablet to be a full-fledged PC with full USB and hardware support and everything.
And it's a great CPU. Tablet, but a crap keyboard.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. A graphics co-pro at the back of the base unit.
And it's a great tablet, but a crap keyboard. Mm.
I didn't hear what you were talking about, but I think I agree with you.
No, you're saying about docking a tablet, but there's a lot of problems with using a tablet as a keyboard. And I'm saying, yeah, because it's a great tablet, but it's a crap keyboard.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you're meaning the on-screen keyboard? No, they were showing like a full USB keyboard.
Yeah, exactly. So if you've got this huge touch interface that they're holding as the way forward and how they're going to interface with Word, what I'm saying is, if you're going to really throw your weight behind a touch interface, you're talking about taking away other input devices, notably your mouse and your keyboard. Otherwise, what's the point? You're stuck with where you were. You've not changed anything. Oh, you've got a concept device, but you've got no functionality associated with it.
I think it's a step towards it, Ewan, and that's the whole point. As we discussed earlier on, I think there's going to be you're going to have the traditional mouse and keyboard, but this is adding another layer on top of it, another way of interfacing with the UI.
But I'll be honest with you, I've seen this happen. Well, I haven't actually seen this happen, but I've seen children smearing their mucky fingers all over a screen, and it's not pretty.
Yeah,
to be honest with you, I'll be sitting here with my mouse and my keyboard, and my screen, because it's so massive, is a good distance away, and I can barely reach the damn thing.
I'm touching photos.
That's what I was getting at before when I was saying about the fact that I didn't necessarily think it worked with a desktop or a laptop. Mm.
So here you go, Adobe. We've got a brand new touch interface. We want you to rewrite Photoshop so it's a touch interface. Now, if you're talking about the fact going through a Wacom tablet that's good got a graphic that. Screen underneath with a pen, I'll go along with that. If you're talking about me drawing lines with my fingers, forget it. Me pork sausages ain't going to man it. And secondly, I want to look at colour contrasts. I don't want marks on my screen from my fingers. I've got to have a clean screen. I switch the lights off in here when I'm doing photo touching. So I've got purely, a really clean and good screen before I start looking at I did a thing for a body shop just recently where I took a picture of a car that was crunched up, and then I went back and took a picture of the same car when it had been repaired, and I'm slowly trying to merge the two pictures together so you can flick between the two, and I'm looking for the colour contrast changes between the two images to try and then use levels to balance those out, and where I want to rub stuff away to make sure that it doesn't appear. And I ain't going to do that in touch. Not in a million.
It's the same with audio and video editing as well.
Yeah.
All right, well, let me clarify. When I was saying that about Office, I was actually picturing less about working with finger touch instead of keyboard and mouse as I was basically everything else about it. So does it look like that really simplified, fewer colors, more like a cartoon kind of look? Does it scale from everything from a tiny little screen up to a 32 inch monitor effortlessly and with vector graphics? I mean, I guess what I'm picturing is what they showed was when you switch from that tile and full screen mode, when you flick that screen and suddenly you're sitting in Microsoft Excel, it's like, whoa, it's like you got hit in the face with a bus, you know? And so there's a middle ground between having that be just touch base and having that have the look and feel of the new Metro UI, you know, doing away with menus, doing away with overlapping windows and the maximize button, you know, all that stuff is what I was considering, and the new fonts and the new appearance. And does it write itself? Because remember, I think by saying that they want people to write in HTML and JavaScript, I think what they're saying is we don't want you writing your own look and feel of your app. We want you writing basic skeleton outlines that we package into our graphics system and our presentation system. We handle the scaling of the upscaling and the screen resizing and all that stuff. So will they rewrite Office to look like that and function in the way that they want developers to model their stuff after, as opposed to looking like the Windows Explorer that we've only ever seen? So that was my difference. It was more about the look and feel and the method of coding than it was voice input versus touch.
No, but the point what I'm saying. Go ahead, Mike. Sorry.
I can say I've been doing a little bit of digging around, and I've found, and I'm posting a link in the chat room, that Microsoft are developing Office for the Windows Phone 7, which is a very similar UI, and it looks superb and looks very powerful as well. So all of the apps Word, it has Outlook and Excel and PowerPoint. It deals with revisions and notes on revisions and all that sort of stuff. So it looks like that they are developing it. In my theory, if they're developing it for the Windows 7 Phone 7 Metro UI, then they could in theory just develop it also for the Metro UI for Windows 8.
Yeah, I think that the question I've got in my mind here, Eric, is the fact that you're talking about the, you know, everyone's talked about the commitment of them and demonstrating the commitment towards the new UI. So that, you know, this is where they had their issue with Vista. Vista's the way forward. We're not supporting XP anymore. Okay, 18 months more and then that's it, I'm afraid. Okay, 6 months more and then absolutely that's it. They're trying to push people away from XP and go towards Vista, and they'll do the same with Vista going towards the Windows 7. If you're saying that they're going to throw a commitment behind 8, they've got to have a user interface with 8 that really functions at all levels and is seamless for people that want to use it. Otherwise, this is just going to be another great concept device that never actually makes it further forwards. Sarah's saying this is a step in the direction of a total control of a human interface, which is, you know, Minority Report-like almost. Mm-hmm. But those kind of things only work when you make Minority Report. Otherwise, mm-hmm. they're novelties. And when they're novelties, they just lay by the side of the road 18 months down the line and everyone's forgotten about them. And then someone says, oh, do you remember? Yeah, I got one of those. Piece of crap.
Yeah, and the corporate's never going to take it up.
At all. And that's where it lives and dies.
I mean, I think that's, it sounds like you're saying what I was saying. Tell me if I'm wrong, but you might be making a different point, which was just that as goes Microsoft Office, as goes the rest of the Windows software world, because they'll see, okay, Microsoft is really committed to this. And okay, now we're seeing how real Office programs, business programs, high-powered, full-featured programs can look and function and work well in this new UI and code base. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, but my point is, do you really see them having a UI that echoes the leap forwards in what you've seen this afternoon in the graphical interface? Or actually what you're going to do is, right, you've got this fantastic spinning graphic system that you can rubble around with your hands, and then you've got to stop, pick up your keyboard, pick up your mouse if you want to use Word.
If what Mike says goes, we will see it sooner or later.
They've got to take a leap that is an enormous leap and a leap of faith into that total contravention of the UI standards that you currently have with a computer, then it could be something incredibly special. If they take a half step, this is going to be a novelty that's laid to waste within a few months.
I totally agree, and I'll go even farther to say that if in 2012 or 2013 we see the next version of Office, okay, let me say if in 2 or 3 years the version of Office that is currently on the market looks like Windows 7 and not like Windows 8 like we've seen yesterday, I think that will, if not spell the death of Microsoft, will at least be a noticeable inflection point in their downward curve.
Yeah, they'll wish they'd have bought Nokia at 11 billion. Absolutely.
The thing, can I just say one thing, though? The thing is here, the whole point about what we're talking about here is that if you're going to use Office to think about Word or whatever, you're talking about something, you're going to be doing something that, say, you're writing a book or a long blog post or something like that. Even if it's an iPad, you're not going to do that kind of thing. I would have, certainly if it was me, I'm not going to do that sort of thing on a software keyboard, on a mouse, on an iPad or any other tablet. I'm going to want a proper keyboard to do that, whatever the platform, whatever the device.
Yeah, no, but remember, Sarah, this is designed for desktop computers too, and I'm saying that's actually the only place where I'm not saying this. I'm not saying it would be a touch keyboard or touch requirement. I'm talking about actually everything else that's new about this, except that it uses a finger and no keyboard.
We'll see.
I'm saying like keyboard and mouse, guy at his desk, just sitting there typing a document, making a spreadsheet. If it doesn't look like the Metro UI in 2 or 3 years, it's over.
Yeah, agreed. Right. Well done. Excellent. Just before we get on to cool thingies, we're going to give a little boost to our sponsors because I've got some very special news associated with them. Sarah's got a bit of web work over the weekend that she doesn't even know about yet. UK2.net, we say every week, they are the people that keep us afloat and we love them to bits. Craig down there at the marketing department has been extremely kind. We've got some competitions in the offing using UK2 with a few little prizes poking around. But one of the things that they've done is they've given us our own bagel tech discount. So here you are, ready for it. If you go to UK2, use the click through on our website, go to bageltechnews.com and then scroll down, use the tracking URL and click through there that's on the UK2 logo. That'll take you to their main page. Buy whatever you want and they'll know that we sent you. Even if you want to sign into your account, just use that link and go to the site and they'll know that we sent you and they'll know that you're loyal to Bageltech and that we've promoted your interaction with them. Here's the really good part. When you buy anything, and we're talking anything, it doesn't matter what service you want from UK2.net, as of today, if you type in the offer code BagelTech, you will get 15% off whatever it is that you buy. Not 10%, 15%. You will get a massive amount of money if you've bought a massive amount of service. So the co-location services, you can make an absolute killing on the savings there. And the same again for things like the VPS servers and so on. So go to uk2.net using our click through, use the offer code BagelTech, and you'll get 15% off anything that you buy. Domain names, e-commerce stuff, web hosting, anything at all from UK2. Thanks ever so much for their sponsorship. We really are lost without them if they disappear. So please, 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 if you do nothing else, make sure you click that link now. If you send out a tweet that references one of the shows, please put a UK hashtag on it or CC at UK2.net and give us that kind of boost that we've got. The other thing I really would like you to do, if you possibly can, is if you listen to the show through iTunes or if you've got an iTunes account, please go to iTunes for all of the shows and give us some reviews. We've got a few reviews here and there across some of the shows, but please give us as many as you possibly can because that's the kind of thing that boosts our rankings in iTunes. And we kind of yo-yo at the moment in and out of the charts and that. And looking at some of the podcasts that stay up there regularly, I don't think they've got any more listeners than we have. I think the difference is the fact that the thing that separates us is they've got 282 reviews and we've got 13. You know, something like that. So please, please, please give us some reviews and please support UK2. We are utterly, utterly in their debt. Thanks very much. Have we got any cool thingies, James?
I was going to say, if you're in the chat room right now, when we finish with the show, pop it to iTunes and do a review. Yes, I've got a cool thingy. It's an Android application. This is a photo of Doc Cotton. It's called Astrid, which is a simple task recording dashboard. It's welovastrid.com. I've been looking for something that sort of I can use as not just a checklist of things to do, but for example, I need to put the recycle bin out every other Tuesday, and I need to be reminded to do that. And I've been looking for something, and Astrid seems to do exactly what you needed to do: recurring tasks, subtasks. And it's quite a pretty interface, and I like it, and it's completely free. So that's welovastrid.com.
Jolly good. Excellent.
Dot cotton.
Mike Hurley, have you got any Les Butcher or whatever his name was? Dot cotton butcher.
I do have a cool thingy, if that's what you're asking, Ewan. I have it's called... I'm a big James Bond fan. Love James Bond movies. Very happy that they've announced the release date of the 23rd movie, which is going to be in October 2012. It's an app called Bond Mixology. What it does is it has a list of all of the movies and how many drinks James had in each of the films and what they are and the timestamps of every drink. And then if you click through onto the timestamp, it gives you the recipe of how the drink can be made. It also tells you where James is at that point and what he's doing.
That's kind of cool.
That's a labor of love.
That is definitely a labor of love, isn't it?
It comes from a database that a guy created. The site is bondmixology.com, and it was turned into an app, but it's been around for a while. But the fact that they went in and put in the time codes is that's pretty extreme, but I'm pleased that they did it.
It's kind of sad.
I wasn't going to say that. I was thinking it. Someone with way too excellent much time
pick,
on mate. His hands.
Excellent pick. Sarah, what's your cool thing?
Well, I had something else planned, but I must admit, after the part of the conversation we had earlier, I was so impressed with this Google Authenticator that having played with it during the show, that I'm going to make that my cool thingy.
Nice to know you were paying attention. So, Google Authenticator.
Yes, I mean, I will have a play with it a bit more over the next few days, but I'm definitely... I like those kind of things. So, yes, definitely.
Excellent. Good pick. Is it free? I take it is.
I think so, yeah. I mean, I've already downloaded it, and it's running on my Nexus S, and it seems to... didn't ask me for any money. Most Google things are pretty free, so...
Good. And finally, Eric Lanigan, with his eyes darting around in the top of his head, wildly trying to think of something... You can't fool me anymore, boy.
My pick is an education in HTML5, the programming language of the future. A lot of JavaScript, cascading style sheets, asymmetric JavaScript, and scalable vector graphics. If I were a programmer, I would learn HTML5 and the other things that are encompassed in that term before I would learn any other programming language or interface, including for iOS, because that's clearly where everything is eventually going. HTML5, the common denominator of all operating systems, and now the premier programming language and almost exclusive one, native one, of Windows 8, Chrome OS, Web OS, and very, very well supported by everything else and every other browser.
Jolly good. Excellent pick.
Not really.
No.
But thank you.
I just thought, well, you've had a bad day, dude. I thought I would rub it in by going, what the hell?
I didn't think it was
going
to make it Windows 8.
Yeah, no.
Now, it's only for tablets anyway.
My pick is probably more appropriate to put into the photo show, which we're recording tomorrow morning with Alex and with Chris Forsman. But we don't do a cool thingy on there. We do a cheap thingy, so it shouldn't cost very much. And this cost a fair amount. My pick is, if you're into Photoshop, there's a temptation to buy things like Deek's Photo Bible and that kind of stuff. And Deek's Photoshop Bible, I had that for about a week, and I gave it away in the end to my cousin, who I think holds a door open with it now. So it's not the best thing. The person that I latched onto when I first started using Photoshop, which was Photoshop 6, was a guy named Scott Kelby, who's on the development team for it, a fantastic photographer and an absolute guru when it comes to Photoshop use. He's got lots and lots of basic books, but if you're into your Photoshop and you want something more advanced, I flatter myself I do pretty well in Photoshop, but he's just got a book out called Professional Portrait Retouching Techniques, and it tells you how to do portrait retouching, surprisingly, to a really, really high standard, nay, a professional one. It's not cheap. It's $50, but it's one of his better books, and it's certainly better at the high end for understanding how to do stuff. The other thing that you can get with Scott Kelby's books is that they're all about doing something within a real framework. You can go and download all the images that he uses in the book from his website so that you can play along with everything that he's doing. And also, you're learning a technique, but you're not actually saying, right, this is the only time you can use it. If you think a bit laterally, every technique that you learn in this book, you can apply to landscapes, you can apply to an awful lot of other things. You can soften skies with it. There's tons of stuff you can do, not just soften skin. So there you go. Professional Portrait Retouching Techniques by Scott Kelby. If you want a Photoshop book, don't buy anyone else's stuff, but not Scott Kelby's. He really is.
It's the one with a frightening looking woman on the front.
Matty, she isn't. She isn't. Quite how she got into modelling, I'll never know. Don't tell her I said that. Thanks. Right, we'll be back again next week on Thursday. We're going to be on Thursday nights at 9:30 from now on. So we'll let you know if that changes. But we're going to give it a try because we're all more awake and it's not the Friday feeling. And also it means we can have a beer on Friday night and relax. So Bagel Tech, big next Thursday, 9:30 p.m. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening.
Oh, who are we? Wait.
Oh, no. I've cut it up.
They know
who
we are.
That's why I said oh. You can get hold of me.
If they don't know, then they're not good enough.
Quack, quack.
Who cares who you lot are?
Oh, thanks.
It's all you're the real star.
It's all about me.
We right. You didn't say how you can get hold of you either. So.
No, I didn't. By the way, then, who are you? James?
You can get hold of me at... ericlanigan.com with two K's.
No complaints here.
No,
wait,
Syzygy,
two K's.
SYZYGY.
On Twitter. Mike, I do apologise, mate. Go ahead. Where can we get a hold of you?
You needn't solely apologise to me, Ewan. You can find me on Twitter at imike, I-M-Y-K-E, and links to everything I do at thepodcastingproject.com.
And got the Bro Show is your flagship, isn't it? Your flagship
That's the flagship. That's the flagship show, thebroshow.co.uk.
Excellent. Sarah, sorry, where can we get a hold of you?
That's all right, Ewan. You can get a hold of me on my website, which is sarahjaneuk.com, or on Twitter at sarahjaneuk.
Thank you. And Eric, who only comes on for the name check, because why else would you bother to miss this show?
What a man.
Where can we get a hold of you?
Thank you for asking. EricLanigan.com and Twitter.com/EricLanigan. ERIKLANIGAN.
Right, that's it. I ain't playing the credits again. Bugger off.